We sleep better when we sleep cool. As the weather is getting warmer, staying cool while we sleep will be top of mind. Organic and natural bedding sleeps cooler than cheaper synthetic alternatives, and they last longer too. A fresh season calls for a fresh start, and that includes your bed. From seriously soft organic cotton sheets to breathable silk and luxurious down duvets, Avocado Green's bedding makes it easy to reset your space sustainably. Perfect for hot sleepers in warmer months, Avocado Green sheets and duvet inserts are naturally breathable and help regulate temperature, so you sleep cool, dry, and comfortable all night long. Avocado bedding is thoughtfully designed and expertly crafted for lasting durability. From reinforced stitching to premium long staple organic fibers, every detail is made to stand the test of time, wash after wash, season after season. We sleep better when we sleep cool, so head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better. Remember when I talked about True Diagnostics True Age Test? Well, I took it myself and the results blew my mind. I was very wrong. If you remember, I was worried about my brain and not my cardiovascular health. And it turns out my brain's fine, but my cardiovascular health needs work. But luckily, my biological age was really right on track with my actual age, which is good because research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal, and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means that you have a lot of control over it. The True Age test didn't just give me a number. It showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging, and it was eye-opening. And I will say, I definitely picked up the workouts after I learned that my cardiovascular health isn't as good as I thought it was. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, and it was just a quick, painless finger prick that I made Ethan do because I was too scared. You send it off in a tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and health. So if you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use ATTWG at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you wish to ask. And then she can either type a response or use their voice to text feature, and MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy. It's something that you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. And this is something that Ethan and I had been thinking about doing with our parents. We have this podcasting equipment, so we wanted to find a way for them to tell their story. But I love this because it's so regimented. They send them a question every week, and it just makes it really easy and turnkey. And it just seems like a great way for us to get our parents' stories down so that our children and our children's children can have them. So if you're interested, check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG at checkout for 15% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG for 15% off today. A teenage girl leads a troubled life. She lives in a dangerous neighborhood. She's been rebelling. She's been having family problems. Then
she disappears. So what caused it? Did she run away voluntarily to escape her troubles? Did she fall victim to a criminal roaming her streets? Are family members not telling the whole story about the last day she was seen? These are the questions that have been swirling around the disappearance of Ashley Summers, a 14-year-old Cleveland, Ohio native who was last seen on July 6, 2007. What appeared to be a relatively straightforward runaway case has morphed over the years into a rat's nest of terrifying possibilities. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of Ashley Summers. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Nicole Summers was born on June 16, 1993 in Cleveland, Ohio. She was the oldest of six children, born to Jennifer Summers. Ashley's father took off after she was born, but Jennifer met someone new and gave birth to Ashley's five half-siblings.
Six kids.
Yes, six.
Wow.
I know.
That's impressive.
Yeah, well, but Jennifer was used to it. So she came from a really big family herself. And they all, lived nearby each other in Cleveland. Some lived in the suburbs, but they're all still in the area. And the family was made up of 10 aunts and uncles, plus cousins, great aunts, great uncles, and then grandparents.
Yeah, well, I mean, you came from a... I guess it was a moderately big family. I mean,
bigger than yours.
Yeah. I came from a small family.
Yeah.
So just the thought of having, so many siblings is just mind-boggling to me.
Well, for...
It's mind-boggling to me as a parent. Like, how do you...
Because we have three and it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It's so excessive. Of them? I know. Well, but for me too, it wasn't like this because though I did come from a big family, everybody was spread out across the country.
Yeah. And... I mean, not generations, but there were
big age differences.
Big age gaps,
yeah. And so I didn't grow up with a large family,
right,
like the Summers family. Ashley's mom, Jennifer, said on an episode of Disappeared about her family's case, quote, "Our family was her life, you know? I mean, aunts were her best friends, like sisters. I mean, she had lots of love, lots of support," end quote. Which, I mean, you would hope so, that she liked her family, because it would be really, really tough having a family that big that you couldn't stand.
Yeah.
As the big sister to five other kids, Ashley was incredibly helpful and would watch after the children, play with them, take them to the park, things like that. Everyone loved Ashley. And, she was the oldest kid, so she had a special spot in their hearts.
Right.
But as Ashley approached her 14th birthday, boys started entering the picture, as they tend to do. And things started to change, which, makes total sense to me. That 13, 14 age is a very delicate time. And
I mean, yeah. I was definitely no angel around that time. I won't get into specifics here, but yeah.
Yeah.
It was quite the rebellious time for
me. Exactly. And I think that's why, you'll identify with this story because, some people might find it shocking or whatever, but, I find it very understandable and relatable. I'm not saying I would have made all the same decisions, but, I get it. So right before Ashley turned 14, she met an older boy in her neighborhood named Gene, and Gene was, 16. So I know you're looking at me, and it's so crazy because it's right at the point where it's too much of an age difference, but it's very close to being okay, but it's not quite okay because she's probably still because this is summertime, so she's probably going into middle school, and he's definitely fully in high school.
Yeah, no, I'm smiling because at 14 I had a 17-year-old girlfriend.
Yeah, so everybody knows you're gross.
The age gap is the same, I'm just saying.
Right, but that wasn't the healthiest thing that you've ever done either.
Oh, no, definitely not.
Yeah.
No, but, it is what it is.
Exactly. I mean, it's not a crazy, you know, unheard of thing.
Yeah.
But you can probably understand why Jennifer was, like, not thrilled about this situation. So, I mean, you know, we've got red flags, like, Jennifer, you know, really wanted Ashley to pump the brakes on this. But as these things tend to go, the more Jennifer disapproved, the more Ashley, like, ran right to him.
Right.
This rebellion kind of started things. So this led to other acts of rebellion. Jennifer suspected that Ashley was kind of taking money out of her purse here and there.
Mm.
Yeah, so like nothing crazy, but enough that she was noticing something was up.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day, Ashley took Jennifer's entire paycheck out of a drawer.
Wow.
Yeah, so like that's hardcore. I mean, you know, we all did bad things, but like stealing your mom's entire paycheck.
The entire paycheck, yeah, that's pretty.
Yeah, that's a little rough.
Reason.
And so what's even worse, like the poor Jennifer, I can't imagine as a mom. You know, one, you have to deal with the fact that your 14-year-old daughter stole your paycheck. But then a few days later, she found out why she needed the money. When Ashley came home one day, she had a giant tattoo of a heart on her arm that said Jean in the middle.
Jean?
Jean, her 16-year-old boyfriend.
Oh, boy.
I know.
So I'm covered in tattoos, but I didn't get my first one until I was 18.
So when Ashley came home with this awful tattoo of her first boyfriend's name, Jennifer, of course, hit the roof.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm sure.
It's such a short-sighted decision, you know? At this point, Jennifer was basically at the end of her rope. But luckily, she had this huge family around to offer support, so she wasn't dealing with this alone or, you know, even with Ashley's stepfather. Like, they had this whole support system.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jennifer went to her own mother, who, you know, probably had a little bit of experience with dealing with rebellious teenagers, and she asked her what to do. So Jennifer's mother agrees that, you know, listen, it's summertime, Ashley's out of school, like, why doesn't she move in with me for a little while, basically? You know, just get her out of the house, get her out of the neighborhood, which, remember, that's how she met her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And she's 14. She can't drive. And so it's not like, you know, Jennifer's mom lives crazy far away. She lives on the other side of town, but it's like 5 miles, you know? And when you're 14.
Right. It's far enough away, unless Jean has a car or a driver's license.
Right.
He goes over there.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's Cleveland, there are buses, there are whatever. But,
yeah.
I mean, it still makes it harder. You
right.
know, it still puts a little bit of a physical distance in there, which I think was Jennifer's main idea, you know?
You remove people, places, and things.
Exactly.
You know, that's the edict of any addiction.
Is, right.
You know, you get out of those places, not to say that this was an addiction, but...
Well, no, but it is the same principle, right? Like,
right.
I mean, it's easy to be obsessed with somebody when you're around them, but like, you know, maybe you get away, you get some distance, you do some other things, meet some other people.
Yeah.
Maybe those feelings change.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's worth a shot at the very least.
Yeah.
And things do seem to get at least a little bit better after Ashley moves in with her grandma. But, you know, as you may imagine, living with her grandmother did prove to be a little boring for the 14-year-old.
I'm sure.
Yeah. But luckily for Ashley, again, she had a ton of family that lived nearby on that side of town. So she just kind of started bouncing around between relatives' houses. And you know, like I said, this is summertime. So she didn't have school. You know, she's 14. She didn't have a job. Like,
yeah. And if they're all close, then it doesn't really.
Exactly. You know, so it still kind of got her away from.
It's not couch surfing with friends. It's couch surfing with close
yeah,
relatives.
Like her aunts and uncles.
Yeah.
Her great-uncle Kevin's house apparently was a big hangout for the cousins because he spoiled them and let them do whatever they wanted. Ashley's aunt Danielle had also just moved into a place in the Cleveland suburbs, and Ashley talked about, like, moving in with her, too. So, you know, she had options. She was going around. July 4th, 2007 was Ashley's other great-uncle Keith's birthday. He had a pool party at his house like he did every year. Ashley came, but Jennifer and the other kids didn't for some reason, but there were plenty of other family members there. And apparently, Ashley did seem a little depressed when she got there, but she eventually got in the pool and started playing with her cousins and, you know, seemed to cheer up. She stayed there for around 3 or 4 hours and then just told them that she was going to go to her Aunt Christina's house, who lived just a few blocks away. She left Keith's house around 6 p.m. and apparently hasn't been seen since. What happens next instantly reminded me of the Relisha Rudd case, because the thing is, no one really realized Ashley was missing at first. Each relative thought she was just staying with another relative. But unlike with Relisha, Ashley's mother, Jennifer, said that she talked to her daughter either every day or every other day. So when a few days went by without hearing from her, you know, Jennifer got with the other family members and they realized what was going on and they did report Ashley missing. Due to her recent rebellion and the fact that she had already been bouncing around between houses, police classified Ashley as a runaway. And, you know, honestly, her family pretty much agreed with them. Like, she had a bag. Yeah. I mean, you know, she had a bag packed. Of course, that was mainly because she was bouncing around from house to house. But, yeah, they thought, okay, well, she just, you know, so maybe.
She said that she was staying at this other aunt's, or going over to this other aunt's house.
Yeah. But her Aunt Christina.
Aunt Christina said later.
She never made it over there.
Was that actually a plan, or was that just something that Ashley made up?
Well, I don't know that it was necessarily something that she made up, but I don't think it was also like a plan either. And I'll get to why I don't think it was a plan.
Okay.
But it also wasn't unusual for her to just like go pop in to people's houses. You know, I didn't get the impression that she like necessarily planned half of the things that she did, you know? She would just kind of show up.
I'm just wondering if Ashley told her relatives she was going over to this other relative's house as a means to escape, knowing that it would bounce around as to who she was staying with.
Yeah, maybe.
Like that's
yeah, because a if good she way if
getting out.
Yeah, because if she didn't have an actual plan to go over to Christina's house, then Christina wouldn't have been worried when she didn't show up.
Exactly.
So even though Ashley's family did believe she ran away, I mean, she was still barely 14, so they were obviously concerned, and so they banded together and started looking around town for her immediately. Well, they didn't turn up any sign of Ashley, neither did police. I mean, in fact, it didn't really seem like police were putting much effort into this case at all. Basically, Ashley came from a bad part of Cleveland. And even though she was only 14, they just kind of seemed to shrug their shoulders and just accept that she ran away. Mm-hmm. According to an article published in the Lakewood Observer in 2009, nearly 2 years after Ashley's disappearance, the local media wasn't very interested either. Quote, "The local media put out the family's press release, but hasn't bothered to speak with the family, nor have any of the outlets broadcasted any follow-up stories." End quote. And, you know, this drives me crazy because, like, again, even if she did run away, she's 14, barely 14. She just turned 14.
Right. She's still, I wouldn't want to call her an endangered youth, but.
I mean, she's 14. You know, she had been hanging out with the wrong people. And to me, there's a really good chance that she is in some sort of danger or, yeah. You know, that she's not in a safe place.
Right. I mean, even if she ran away with her boyfriend.
Right.
Her boyfriend's 16.
Yeah. Like, where are they going
to
go?
Which I'm assuming at this point, the cops have already
talked to the boyfriend.
They've talked to Gene. Exactly. And figured out that that's
he's
not,
there. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly. And your point about the plan and going over to Christina's and her using that as a cover is a good one. Personally, I don't necessarily believe that she just decided to run away after this pool party. Especially because the same day she went missing, she lost her phone. Well, and
she lost her phone before the pool party?
Yeah. And I don't mean in the typical 14-year-old's way. On the morning of the pool party, Ashley was at her other great uncle, Kevin Donathan's house. Remember, he was the one that the cousins liked to hang out.
He's the cool one, right?
Yeah. But that day, Donathan and Ashley got into an argument, allegedly over Ashley texting family gossip. The argument got so heated that Donathan grabbed Ashley's phone and broke it. And Yeah, and this is 2007. Like, so we're talking, I mean, those phones were heavy duty. Like, it's not these little wimpy iPhones that you could break if you just look at it wrong. Like, you really had to try to break a phone in 2007. Mm-hmm. So when Ashley showed up to that pool party later in the day and was seemingly down in the dumps, as their family members put it, like, that could be a big reason why.
Yeah.
So, you know, all right, so you can look at that one of two ways. Maybe Ashley was just fed up with her family and upset about the fight and did just decide to take off. Or you can look at the fact that she didn't have a phone as a reason she wouldn't have left right then, because she was 14 with very few resources and now no method of communicating with friends or anyone else who may help her get what she needed to run away.
Mm-hmm.
As time went on and Ashley didn't show back up, her family held out hope that she was still out there and safe and just really taking the rebellious teen thing a bit too far. And a month after her disappearance, Ashley's mom does receive evidence that seems to support this. Jennifer Summers received a phone call. The voice on the other end of the line was rushed, but she believes it was Ashley. She said, "It's me, Mom. I'm okay." And that was it. The call was never traced, and though Jennifer does believe it was her daughter, no one has been able to definitively prove that.
So you said the phone call was never traced.
Right.
I'm assuming that's because it happened so quickly.
I don't know. And I mean, this is 2007, so like they should have been able to have the number. I don't know if it came from a payphone. Like they should have been able to look at the phone bill. You know, just to see where the incoming call was coming from.
Right.
But I don't know. There's no, like, more information on this call.
So maybe the police did do some type of investigating regarding that phone call, but they didn't release any.
Yeah, I think they did at some point. And it could be that maybe Jennifer didn't call it into the police right away or, you know, whatever it was.
Yeah.
But, you know, she does think that it was Ashley, but she's not positive. And like I said, we can't really prove it either way. So at this point, it appears that Ashley did in fact take off. But what's interesting is that her boyfriend Gene, the one that she was so in love with that she got his name tattooed on her body, he says that he never heard from her after July 4th, 2007, and his story has not changed since then.
At this point, there would have been some evidence that she's seen him.
Right. And apparently Jennifer, I read it in one of the articles, Jennifer was convinced that Gene knew where she was or like had something to do with it or, you know, helped her get away or whatever. So Jennifer would follow him around and like basically just did her own surveillance on him, hoping that he would lead her to Ashley.
To his like mysterious 16-year-old safe house?
Well, I mean, he was apparently going into like some shady places in Cleveland. And at one point, she actually did call the police because he went into some like abandoned building or something like that. So she did call the police to have them look at it. But I mean, they never found anything. And for his part, you know, Gene was so like freaked out by this whole situation and the suspicion and the fact that like Ashley's mom was following him and police kept on talking to him, that he ended up having a lot of problems and, you know, like he started doing drugs and, you know, his life was very negatively affected by all of this.
Did the police ever look into Kevin, the uncle? I'm wondering, you know, you said the fight was, is this coming up later in the story?
Yeah, I'm not sure how much they looked into the individual family members at the beginning of the investigation. I mean, they definitely interviewed them, of course, you know, trying to figure out where she was, who she was with. I mean, they did interview Kevin at the beginning and like, and he told them that they had that fight and he broke the phone and, you know, all of that. So that information did come out early on. For the next 2 years, Ashley's case languishes. Investigators and media aren't really interested. Her family doesn't give up hope, but, you know, they don't hear from her. And, like, what else can they really do at that point? They're just stuck waking up every day looking for answers that never come. But in March of 2009, that changes with Twitter. That year, Twitter was still pretty new, and only a handful of celebrities had a presence on the social media platform. One of the biggest at the time, if not the biggest, was Ashton Kutcher. Did you not know any of this? I'm sure, of course, you didn't know any of this.
No, March 2009 was when my first son was born. I was a little preoccupied.
I joined Twitter in August of 2008 when I was 8 months pregnant with Cooper.
Okay, well, you know, like I didn't even get a Facebook account until after...
I know.
After Xander was born, so...
Ashton Kutcher was an early adopter on Twitter and had a huge following. And on March 7th, 2009, he sent out a simple tweet. Can you please retweet missing 15-year-old girl, Cleveland area? And it had a link. With that, all of a sudden, Ashley's case went national.
What? How was he connected?
So he's not connected. I think he just... saw something about her story. So he's done a lot of like charity work with like sex trafficking. And
oh, really?
Yeah. So I think it all has something to do with that. So he was probably just saw it on some sort of missing person site or whatever. Mm. Now, interestingly, with people actually paying attention, some important questions started being asked and connections were made. And it turns out Ashley wasn't the only young girl to go missing from that Cleveland neighborhood.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. On April 23rd, 2003, 16-year-old Amanda Berry finished her shift at Burger King and started the short walk home, but she never made it. The next year, on April 2nd, 2004, 14-year-old Gina De Jesus was walking home from school with a friend. They parted ways, and Gina never made it home. In 2009, after people started taking notice of Ashley's case, some started to wonder if the three missing girls who all vanished within blocks of each other were connected.
I mean, they have to be. I know that we talked about this in the Angela Hammond case, you know, where there were theories of... these people abducting different women.
Mm-hmm. Across Missouri?
Yeah, but across Missouri, that's...
Right, yeah, because each one of those cases was about 70 miles apart. This was blocks on the same side of Cleveland. Like, right. Not even, like, one was on one side, one was on the other.
I mean, they have to be related.
Well, so that's what people started wondering. According to an article on the Anderson Cooper 360 blog from 2009, the FBI was looking into the three cases as possible abductions, perhaps by the same person. While there were now people looking into Ashley's case and, you know, making these possible connections, like they still didn't have any real answers. And there weren't really any answers in either Amanda or Gina's cases either. That is, until a shocking 911 call. On May 6, 2013, a terrified woman called 911 and said, quote, I'm Amanda Berry. I've been kidnapped. I've been missing for 10 years, and I'm here. I'm free now, end quote. Amanda Berry was alive. So is Gina De Jesus. They had been held captive for the last decade by Ariel Castro.
Okay.
In his Cleveland basement.
Gotcha.
When they were rescued, there was a third woman with them, but it wasn't Ashley. Michelle Knight had been kidnapped by Castro from a Family Dollar store in 2002. The three women had been beaten and repeatedly raped, and when they were freed, Berry escaped with her 6-year-old daughter, whom she had given birth to in captivity. Quick side note about how frustrating this case is. Because of the bad part of town that all of these girls, now women, came from. When the articles started coming out about, hey, maybe Ashley's case is connected to these two others, Michelle Knight's name never came up. She wasn't even in the database as a missing person. She'd like gotten deleted out of there for some reason. So she was kidnapped on her way. She had a son. She was kidnapped on her way to go to a custody hearing for her son because her son had gotten taken away and was in foster care. And she stopped in a Family Dollar to ask for directions. And Ariel Castro came up to her and said, oh, hey, I know exactly where that building is. Like, I'll take you. And he kidnapped her. So this is in 2002. She was 20, 21 years old. So they just thought, oh, whatever. She was like sad about her son, so she ran away. And nobody ever looked for her. Nobody ever connected her disappearance to the two other disappearances or three other disappearances. And she was not a blip on the radar. When the three women were rescued, like, no one really knew what was going on either, you know, or if there were more women down there or what this was. I mean, it was just a horrible, horrifying thing that had happened. The entire city, along with Ashley's family, held their breath and prayed for a miracle. But the miracle didn't come for Ashley. Castro later told investigators that the three kidnappings were unplanned crimes of opportunity. Despite the small geographical area and the similarity in the disappearances, Castro was never officially tied to Ashley's disappearance, and he died by suicide in prison in 2013.
What's the timeline again? I know you said.
So Michelle Knight
was 2002.
2002, and then Amanda Berry was 2003. Gina De Jesus was 2004, and Ashley was 2007. So they were all kidnapped before her.
It's reasonable to assume that if Ashley had been kidnapped by
Ariel Castro,
Ariel Castro, that the other women would have seen her.
Right.
If he had taken her down into the basement.
Right. I mean, there's a possibility that he kidnapped her, something went wrong, she never made it down to the basement.
Right. Do we know, yeah. Did they search any other areas of his property?
I think they did. I mean, like, yeah, they searched the whole thing, and actually the house was eventually demolished.
Okay.
Because, you know, no one wanted any part of that.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Yeah.
The resale value on that house would be very high.
At this point, no one knew what to think. Ashley hadn't been heard from in 6 years, and they had no clues in her disappearance. Though her disappearance seemingly wasn't related to Castro's victims somehow, the FBI did still believe that Ashley met with foul play simply due to the length of time that she had been gone without making contact. Because, again, even in a runaway situation, typically there is some sort of real contact made, you know, before they've been missing for 6 years. But then in 2015, Ashley's family thought they finally had an answer. And it was a relatively positive one. Since her disappearance, Ashley's step-grandmother spent a lot of time on the internet getting Ashley's story out there and searching for any clues. That article from the Lakewood Observer that I mentioned earlier in 2009 basically came about because Linda had been posting about Ashley on their message board. In January of 2015, Linda was on the internet and came across a photo of a woman who looked eerily like Ashley. Okay, so I'm going to show you a photo of Ashley when she was 14 and then an age-progressed photo of her. This is Ashley around the time she went missing when she's 14. And this is an age-progressed photo of her when she's 24. And this is the photo that her step-grandmother saw on the internet.
Yeah, that looks a lot like her. I mean, that looks almost exactly like the age-progressed photo.
I know, which is so weird.
Yeah, because normally those things...
Yeah, they can be a little iffy, but I mean, and it's her step-grandmother. Like, I know we're strangers and we're like, oh yeah, it looks like her, but her step-grandmother thought that it looked like her. You can see all of these photos on our website and our social media accounts, but the photo that Linda saw, the one that I just showed you, was put out by the FBI. It was a photo from an ATM in Warwick, Rhode Island, of a woman and a male accomplice who are being accused of identity theft, fraud, and other related crimes. So, yeah, it was an ATM photo. The card was not hers. Linda and the rest of Ashley's family thought that it looked so much like her that they contacted Warwick police, who agreed. Warwick PD publicized the case in hopes of finding the mystery woman and, you know, also seeing if it's Ashley. But they didn't really receive any leads. The FBI got involved at that point and launched a search for the woman. And I can't imagine what Ashley's family must have been going through. I mean, there appeared to be a very good chance that Ashley was alive and healthy. I mean, a criminal, but still, well, like...
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do at that point.
I mean, she's an alive criminal.
Yeah.
But this investigation, unfortunately, would take months. They could not track this woman down. And it wouldn't be until July of that year that the FBI would come out and say that the woman in the ATM photo was not Ashley.
And how did they determine that?
I could not figure this out for the life of me, because the original article that I read just said that, like, they said, oh, yeah, no, it's not her, we're sure, but didn't say that they had found her or who she was.
Right.
Yeah, so I had no idea, like, how the FBI knew it wasn't her, because I don't think they – I don't even know if they ever found her. I never found any articles saying that they actually physically found this lady, and I searched for follow-ups. But I read in another article that, because they put up billboards and everything, that apparently the parents of the woman came forward and said that it was their daughter and that she had been involved in petty crime and, you know, things like this. And presumably, like, they knew who the guy was, too, who was in the car with her. But, yeah, so I guess that's why, which, I mean, still really isn't 100% to me.
You said that that was from one article. I mean,
yeah.
even if that were true, I'm sure that the FBI did further investigation.
Yeah, I mean, one would hope, right?
Yeah.
So this is 2015, 8 years after Ashley disappeared, and her family really just has more questions than answers. Could she have been a victim of Ariel Castro who didn't survive? Could she be out and about living a life? Like, what on earth happened to Ashley? But as it would turn out, in 2018, another option emerged. In November of 2018, Cleveland police and the FBI announced that they had new information in Ashley's case that put her last known whereabouts into question. Not only that, the day and time at which she was last seen was also up in the air. Police said that they believed there were two additional areas of interest where she was last seen. Yeah, so at the beginning of this episode, I said she was last seen on July 6th.
At the pool party.
At the pool party, but it might have been later than that. Remember Ashley's great uncle, Kevin Donathan?
Oh, boy.
Here we go. One you asked about?
Mm-hmm.
He broke Ashley's phone after an argument on July 4th, and one of the areas of interest was the house that he lived in 2007. He no longer lived there at this time in 2018, but the current residents cooperated with police, and they dug in the backyard.
Oh, no.
From what it sounds like, they didn't find anything related to Ashley's disappearance, but interestingly, a month later, in December of 2018, Kevin Donathan was arrested and charged with multiple crimes, including rape, attempted rape, and gross sexual imposition.
What even is that?
I mean, gross sexual imposition, I don't know, but it doesn't sound super pleasant.
No.
Whatever it is.
I can't imagine what that is compared to the, what, like, what the charge is.
Yeah, there were a lot of charges, and police at the time when he was arrested for all this didn't name him as a suspect in Ashley's disappearance, but a relative told WKYC News that, you know, in November when this was kind of happening and they were digging in his backyard, that police and the FBI kind of came and re-interviewed a bunch of them, and Kevin's name kept on coming up.
In what context?
Well, they don't, she doesn't really say in what context, but that it just kept on coming up. And, you know, they did dig in his backyard. On February 25th of just this year, 2020, Donathan was sentenced to 35 years in prison for his crimes. Despite all of this, though, Ashley still has not been found. There haven't been any real clues since she was last seen in 2007. Ariel Castro is dead. Kevin Donathan is in prison and either doesn't have any information about Ashley or
he's not talking.
Exactly. No. And so the rest of Ashley's family just continues to wait. They continue to post messages to her on the Help Find Ashley Summers Facebook page that they run. But so far, their pleas for her to contact them have gone unanswered.
Right away, my suspicion was the cool uncle.
Right.
Now, so do you have any background on the uncle? Was he married? Did he have any kids?
I don't think so.
Was there any allegation of molestation within the family from him?
Well, not that I read, but I just find it very interesting that he got so enraged with Ashley that he broke her phone over family gossip.
Right.
Like,
and
that
is the family gossip.
Sticks with me, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that he's indicted and arrested and convicted of a billion sex crimes later on. I mean, you know, yes, this happened many, many years later, but I mean, I don't think he just became a sex offender in 2018 when he was arrested.
Right. That's like, just what they got him on.
Exactly. So what was going on? Like, why was he the cool uncle, you know?
Is he providing drugs to the kids?
Right.
Is anything else happening?
Yeah. And of course, this is all speculation. We don't know. There isn't any more background info on this that I could find. But yeah, I mean, just something with him breaking the phone, like that just really did not sit well with me.
What family gossip could get you so angry that you would break your niece's phone?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, to me, he's the prime suspect.
Yeah. But like I said, I mean, they didn't find anything related to Ashley, at least,
right.
When they dug in the backyard. And he hasn't been officially linked to her disappearance. So I don't know if they're still investigating him as a suspect, if they're trying to talk to him more that he's in prison now, you know, or what's happening. I just sincerely hope, and it does seem like this, that now the FBI is involved. Now they are taking this case seriously, that they don't think that she just ran away and is living a happy new life.
Right.
So whatever avenues they're going down right now, I hope that, you know, they're going to be successful, that somebody's going to talk, that somebody's going to say something, and they're going to be able to get this family the answers that they need.
If Ashley is out there, you know, we said this in the Daniel Yoon case,
mm-hmm.
you know, just call.
Yeah. You don't have to go back.
You're an adult now.
Yeah.
Right. How old is she now? She'd be
27.
Mm-hmm. So if you ran away, yes, you committed a crime back then, but the statute of limitations are up. You know, if you are out there and you are hearing this, just make that phone call.
Yeah. They just need to know what happened. Summers has been missing since sometime between July 4th and July 9th, 2007. She was 14 at the time of her disappearance. She would be 27 years old today. If you have any information about what may have happened to her, please contact the Cleveland Police Department at 216-623-5005 or the Cleveland Division of the FBI at 216-552-1400. You can see all of the sources for this episode, along with photos and videos, on our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook, and at ATTWGPod on Instagram and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Lowe's knows you take pride in every project. So take on what's next today with a free select Craftsman hedge trimmer or leaf blower when you buy a 20-volt push mower. That's a $119 value on reliable, high-performance Craftsman tools you trust. For the power to do it all, build, repair, restore, maintain, go with Craftsman. Available at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 5/21. While supplies last. Selection varies by location.
At Ritual, Mother's Day is kind of a big deal, and we're celebrating accordingly. Find your ritual. If mom needs a bit of stress relief, digestive support, or is looking to support glowy, smooth skin, do it today with 40% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/podcast. That's ritual.com/podcast for 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.